This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health in Difference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Our next presenter is Michael Stevens, and he's presenting Opening Doors, Building Rainbow Cultural Competency in Mainstream Mental Health Services. Michael has a long history of involvement in queer health and politics in New Zealand, including time as chair of the NZ AIDS Foundation and work with HIV peer support groups. He completed an MA on how MSM use the internet affected safe sex practices and is a regular writer and commentator on queer and cultural issues and politics in New Zealand. After a number of years working in the sociology department at the University of Auckland, he is now a Rainbow Community Liaison at Affinity Services. This presentation looks at the obstacles and opportunities this project has encountered so far. While achieving long-term institutional change is a challenge, early survey results demonstrate a positive attitudinal change and willingness to change among staff that has been throughout the pilot stages of the cycle. Thank you.
I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of this land and their elders, past and present, and the elders of our own community that are here today. I'm from New Zealand. I work for a small mainstream mental health NGO called Affinity Services, and we have a number of small niche contracts to our communities. So we've got, I think it's the only Muslim mental health service in New Zealand. We've got an Asian-specific mental health service in New Zealand. And as of last July, we have a rainbow mental health service as well. So we've been going since July last year, and I'll talk a little bit about the background of that too, how that happened. Now, the work we do, we see it as very much based within human rights. So earlier today, people talked about the Ottawa Charter and the Jakarta Principles, and there was the side conference to that too in 2007, the Yogyakarta Conference. And I think we would all agree that this is quite, well, to us it probably seems self-evident. To the rest of the world out there, it's something they've probably never really thought about. So we do see our work very much as being involved in, or starting from, human rights principles. That's the basis of what we do. Another way of looking at it, and a way that's quite common in New Zealand, is to think about the ideas of cultural competency. So there is a very strong strand within New Zealand healthcare and in other areas too, an expectation that practitioners will be culturally competent when it comes to, now this started with tangata whenua, with the Maori people within New Zealand. So this idea that services needed to be culturally competent, they needed to understand the culture of people coming in. And our claim is that we, you know, now the term we use, that we have been using, the rainbow communities, we have a distinct culture as well. The straight world, the muggles, as I like to call them, they don't know about it so much, they don't get it. But if we're insiders, we do. If we come from this world, we do. We have that understanding. We do have a culture, or a variety of cultures, actually. And they intersect in many places, and in other places, they're different. But as you can see here, the New Zealand Medical Council is stressing the idea of cultural competency. So this strengthens us when we can go into organisations and say, you need to be culturally competent in dealing with people from the queer communities coming into your mental health services. A bit of background. So I think it was 2011 that the Auckland District Health Board commissioned some report, some data. Was it 2011, Robert? Yeah. And this is the first piece of research in New Zealand to look at the mental health needs of people coming from the rainbow communities. And it resulted in this report, Let's Talk About Sex, Sexuality and Gender. And if you Google that title, links will come up that will take you to the report and also to our best practice guidelines as well. That'll probably take you to the Auckland District Health Board site where you can get the PDFs for all of those, that data. Written by two very good friends, Anna Birkenhead and Di Rands, And it's a great piece of research. And if you're interested in this field, it's definitely worth looking at, because I think there'll be some obvious parallels with the Australian experience. Some of the key data that came out, 73%, as you can see, people not talking about who they are, not talking about their sexuality. Look at this figure. So this is some data collected by asking people who are using two different CMHCs, community mental health centres, to fill an anonymous survey, put it in an envelope, send it back. Very high response rate. I think it was around 9.6% return rate, which is very good for that kind of survey. Look at that figure. 26% identifying as being somewhere under that rainbow. So whether that was bi, whether that was trans, whether that was someone who was perhaps a little bit inclined occasionally to having sex with somebody of their own gender, a little bit same-sex attracted, somebody who was completely out as being gay, whatever. But underneath that definition of being rainbow, that is a very high percentage. Now you might say, because these were both central Auckland centres, perhaps there's a little disproportion going on. I think, you know, okay, take 6% off. 20% is still a very high figure of service users coming through, identifying as being part of this community, and yet not feeling able to talk about who they are in settings. This is a finding that is quite controversial when, as I'll talk a little bit about the work we do, the idea that gender identity and sexuality should be raised at the initial point of assessment. So this is a very strong response of people wanting this to be included at that very first point of assessment. And when we go into mental health providers, there's often a lot of reaction to that, a lot of pullback. People say, oh no, we have to establish a therapeutic relationship first. We have to have trust. It's like, well, no, you don't. You actually need to open the space and let people fill it in the way they want to. You don't have to tell them how to fill it, but just give them the space. And medical professionals, mental health professionals, are used to asking difficult questions. So in New Zealand, for example, if you go into most health assessment situations, it's required by law that you are asked if there's a history of family violence. Now that's a difficult question to ask a complete stranger at assessment. It's no more difficult to raise the topics of somebody's sexual identity or somebody's gender identity. So five themes fall out of the report. These won't surprise you, I'm sure. Visibility, and this comes back to so much of the stuff we've been talking about in different workshops around the conference and different presentations. So the need both to see that the service that somebody is going into to access a mental health service, if they can see visible signs that this service understands that we exist as a population, and also the fact that, well, the desire that they can be visible in themselves in a safe way. So the visibility sort of goes two ways here. A real fear of discrimination. And again, you know, coming from a cisgendered, heteronormative world, not surprising. And imagine, you know, you're coming into a mental health service, you're already in a, you know, not in a great place, and you've got this fear sitting there as well. Some people had really good experiences, some people had terrible experiences, so a lack of consistency of care. And that's part of what we address, or we're hoping to address over time. No formal pathways within the mental health system to deal with these things. A lack of policies. So part of what we've done is we've developed a policy template, which we hand out to everywhere we go and say, you don't have a policy here, have ours. And we think it's a good policy. And not surprisingly at all, trans issues particularly misunderstood. So as being, you know, the marginalised within the marginalised group and having some of the biggest issues going on. So what do we do? We go into, our contract is to go into the mainstream mental health services within the Auckland District Health Board area. And we offer them, we don't talk about offering them so much a training, we use this language. We talk about offering a quality improvement cycle or a quality improvement program. because this is the kind of language that managers and people who work in HR understand. So the first thing we do after we've got agreements, so mental health services said yes, and they are, it's great, they are saying yes, come in please. We come in and we audit them. And the audit results are fairly predictable every time. Most of them score pretty low on the things that we assess them against, because most services have never thought about these things before in any great detail. So the audit, of course, generates a report, which usually I get to write, from a lot of them. And a needs assessment falls out of that, which luckily is pretty much cut and paste, because we get just about the same results for everywhere we go. Oh, my funding manager's here. Oops. I do lots of other work. And then we come back and we offer them the training day. So we do a full day's training with them. And the thing that we can sell them this process on, is because within the Auckland District Health Board, we're funded to do this for free. So we can go into the District Health Board's own mental health services and we say to them, you know, we can actually improve the quality of the service you give to your service users at no financial cost to you. It'll be a cost of time. But you have to agree. So we are quite clear on this. It's not just a day of training. You have to agree to take part in this ongoing cycle. So 6 months to 9 months after the initial training period, we come back and audit them again. And hopefully we see a big improvement from where we first started. As I say, the service is so new, we've been going since July last year, we haven't actually got to the second audit yet with anybody, but that will be coming up in May or June. The first organisations. Accreditation is a stage that we have not reached yet. Now, we too have developed a rainbow tick program. It's slightly different from yours. Liam and I had a little chat about it the other day, and he said, you're the rainbow tick thief. But we've agreed that we're working together. Some people in the UK are also using the term rainbow tick, so it doesn't just belong to Australia or New Zealand. It's obviously a term whose time has come in the zeitgeist. So it's out there, and I imagine we're going to see it being picked up more and more globally. And it's a bloody good idea. It really is. So we're working on being able to accredit. We haven't got to that stage yet. But we hope to be able to go in and then say, we can accredit this organisation as being somewhere safe for people from our communities. And that also means that we can remove accreditation if they do not stay up to standard. And then the final part of the cycle is coming in to do either brief refresher trainings and also coming in to do full-day trainings again for new staff. And then it is to continue. This is the goal. So it's not to be seen as a one-off piece of work. Obstacles. Now, again, from what we've been talking about through the last few days, you're not going to be too surprised. Attitudinal obstacles, we don't need it in our service. So we do hear that at times, or we hear sometimes from some services, for example, don't know if I should say, but you know, some services might go, we deal with pregnant women. Do we really need to do this? And it's like, lesbians have children too, and they have mental health issues too. So yeah, and the response to that has been, yes, that makes perfect sense. We would like you to come in and start doing this with us. Thank you. So a really positive response. Again, we don't discriminate. One of the reports here was, we treat everyone the same. Well, you know, whenever people say we treat everyone the same, in fact, you know they don't. They treat everyone like themselves. They don't treat us all as who we are. Those obstacles have actually been relatively easy to get over because of having the data behind us from the report. Structural obstacles. Sometimes getting in and getting to the right people within an organisation to get the process going, that can be challenging. So there might be goodwill, but translating that goodwill into action can be tricky. We come in, the audit we run is quite painless, as I keep telling people. It usually takes about 1.5 to 2 hours with one staff member working with us. So it's not an all day, like a horrible file audit or anything like that. It's quite a manageable thing. But then we ask for a full day's training from 9 till about 3:30 or 4. And the goal is to get, we take a whole of organisation approach. We want everyone to go through the training. So recently we worked with, again, one of the DHB District Health Board services, and I think we did about 38 of the staff, and we have, I think, about 5 or 6 left to pick up. We managed to get people from the reception desk up to senior psychiatrists coming through. And you have to get the people at reception desk. They're so often overlooked in these things, but they're often the first, you know, they can be the first point of contact. So they need to be included. But we're asking for a lot of time. You know, these people are busy, you know, they're working hard, so we're asking for time from them, and we're asking them to make that commitment to the ongoing process. Having the evidence, you know, really does help. Funders have to take it seriously, because we can say, look, you commissioned this report, and look, here's the evidence that comes out of your report. You have to take us seriously. We have had a lot of political support around it too, from people that we've been able to talk with. Professional goodwill, and there was real community support sitting in there as well. What we have seen is a shift. We'd run before and after surveys. And I'll just finish on that note in a second. And the surveys before and post-training show a real shift around some of these key points, like should we ask people these things at the very first session or not? People start to understand how it matters. These issues, complexities of language, take time with. So this is the final slide. You need the evidence, I think, to run stuff like this. You need to get into the correct people. You need to speak their language. As I say, don't go in and talk about training. Don't go in and talk so much about, you know, being queer. Talk about quality improvement and how it's going to add value to the service that they provide to people coming through. Staff are open to engage, I've found so far. And, of course, the ultimate goal is to get better therapeutic outcomes for people who are using the service.
You have been listening to a recording from the Health in Difference 2013 conference held in Melbourne in April 2013. For more information about the National LGBTI Health Alliance, head to lgbtihealth.org.au. And for more information on Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, explore joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.